Some Song Sung by Epistrophic, read by Misty Nursky. Summary. When his fingers start to play, when he lets his fingers start to play, it suddenly is as easy as he remembered. The fragments of melody that he had been resolutely dismissing from his mind for weeks hang in the air around him. He shuts his eyes against it, imagines a flash of red ribbon shining in dark hair, and he can barely breathe. Lan Wangji and his music, through the years. Author's notes. This was written what feels like eons ago for this Lan Wangji Zine project. I remembered it in my files and thought I should throw it up. I think Sai baited this. Takes place alongside the early flashback portions of canon. It is from 2022, so if there are any mistakes, please blame my past self. That's a different person now. If this needs any warnings I've forgotten to do, please do tell me. Title from Elizabeth Bishop. I am in need of music that would flow over my fretful, feeling fingertips, over my bitter, tainted, trembling lips, with melody, deep, clear, and liquid slow. Elizabeth Bishop. This is yours. They tell him, it is part of you now. Lan Wangji nods seriously. His fingers are large enough to hold the guqin securely now, if barely. You must name it. He looks at it, considering. His own instrument. Part of him. Wangji, he says. Wangji has always been his companion, ever since Lan Wangji moved out of the shared disciple dormitories into his own rooms. It has been his most constant and closest associate. Its table is a beautiful thing in itself, as it is only right for a first-class spiritual tool, and he enjoys how the guqin dominates the space, welcoming him when he returns to his rooms. His bed is pushed back into a corner, irrelevant and a distraction. The only other furniture is a desk. The whole room is sparse, clean lines. It suits him. He has never needed its calming effect more. It has only been weeks since Wei Ying left the cloud recesses. Lan Wangji has returned to the guest disciple lectures, and Wei Ying's absence could not be more glaring. It leaves him angry in a way he doesn't know how to describe, does not understand how to manage. It simmers beneath his skin, still. So every evening, he returns to his calm, clean room and sits down in front of his guqin. His practice is as diligent as always, if not more so, as he buries himself in it. That has always been his preferred method of dealing with anything he does not know how to deal with. He returns to exercises he has long since mastered, taking great pains over repeating their intricacies, not letting himself skimp even the slightest bit. He plays music, setting himself to learning and memorizing more of his sect's repertory of spiritual music. It is not enough. It does not calm him, it does not get rid of his constant distraction, his wandering thoughts. Every day he sees Zhang Wenyin scowl at his desk. Every day he stares at the empty desk next to him, and Lan Wangji burns a little more. It has been years since he attempted to compose anything. They were just tiny things, juvenilia, the epitome of childishness, written in the first flush of his excitement and joy of being introduced to the guqin, of learning that his hands could pluck music out of only the air. The way it would let him conjure something from nothing had been utterly miraculous, entrancing. But it had been a long time. There was nothing necessary or useful in it. The things he composed had no spiritual power, no use in improving his cultivation, no ability to help in a night hunt. It had simply been an emotional indulgence. It had been a crutch, and eventually he had turned away from it, instead devoting himself to his education, his training, the discipline that was required of him. But that discipline is failing him now. Not outwardly, of course, but he does not know how long he can contain it. The anger, the simmering tension, the... He sits in front of the guqin and lets his fingertips just brush the strings. Beginning is the hardest part. He had somehow forgotten that. Even in his first lessons, learning how to pluck the string just so with one hand, the amount of pressure to exert with the other, it had taken time. It had been a while before any sound he created had been worth listening to, despite his quiet dedication. No matter. He will do it again, stringing hard-worn notes together until they make sense. But when his fingers start to play, when he lets his fingers start to play, it suddenly is as easy as he remembered. The fragments of melody that he has been resolutely dismissing from his mind for weeks hang in the air around him. He shuts his eyes against it, imagines a flash of red ribbon in shining dark hair, and he can barely breathe. It feels like he is small again, before he even had Wang Ji, when he was playing on a guqin much too big for him, simply to let his emotions pour out in the only way he knew how. Sitting in front of his mother's door, bringing his practice guqin for something to do while he waited, playing to Shufu as seriously as he could, waiting for the small smiles of approval. Letting himself begin is the hardest part. Now he has, he does not know how he will stop. The music that his fingers keep finding their way back to is not a static thing. It unfurls a little more every time he plays it, but remains stubbornly unfinished, no matter how Lan Wangji tries to wrap it up and put it away. But time passes, and though he cannot stop entirely, he plays the piece that has been tormenting him more rarely now. It's more frustrating to play than rewarding, really, bringing up feelings and desires, memories and emotions that he doesn't like to dwell on. He can put Wei Ying behind him now, he thinks. He can do that, at least. He cannot. Or only for a time, and only with it remaining a struggle that he fights day after day. Then there is the discussion conference in Qishan, and a voice calling to him with a red ribbon dancing in the wind. Lan Wangji freezes, and turns away as quickly as he can manage. Wei Ying does not leave him alone, though. Or perhaps it is that he himself cannot leave Wei Ying alone. He feels drawn to him, somehow, like a moth to a flame, always wandering back into his vicinity as soon as he forgets to actively try not to. He longs for a composure he cannot grasp, for a moment of silence, of peace, to sit and play, and no longer feel quite so much. Instead, he gets a voice in his ear and a hand on his ribbon, and then the strange, unmooring sensation of his forehead being bared. Once again, he is turned statue-like, though now it is not so much shock, though shock is certainly present. No, he is abruptly certain that if he moves even once, he will not be able to control what comes after that first movement. His self-control is gone along with his ribbon, and he feels abruptly that, like it, he is tethered only by the place where Wei Ying's hand grasps it. The rest of the ribbon blows in the wind, insubstantial and fluttering. By degrees, he regains himself, or at least control over himself, even if it is only the thinnest of threads. Reaching towards Wei Ying is dangerous. Everything he wants but cannot have, now so close. Simply taking the ribbon is more difficult than the last 10 night hunts he has been on, but he does. He snatches it away as quickly as he can manage. Even when it is back on, though, his self-control feels like a strange, jellied thing, hard to hold on to, like it might slip out of his hands at any moment. He forces himself to turn away from Wei Ying, to leave so that he can be somewhere, anywhere else. There is no time for anything except the business of the discussion conference while they remain in Qishan, and the remaining days. Every morning, when he rises, he looks longingly at Wang Ji in the corner of his room. But there is always something to be done, the competitions, or a matter with which his brother requires help, and by the time he returns in the evening, the people and the constant demands on him have always exhausted him too much, and he falls straight into bed. So it is not until he is home again, in his own rooms, the quiet of cloud recesses settling around him, that he has a chance to play again. He sets Wang Ji on the table and breathes into the silence, welcoming it. Perhaps he ought to have stayed with the other disciples, helped with settling the commotion that came with the return of such a large party. But Lan Xichen understands him, always has, and he gave him only a soft, indulgent smile and let him go. Despite how grueling the last few weeks have been, though, Lan Wangji cannot settle. He tries to meditate for a little, but quickly realizes it is a foolish idea. And anyway, why is he denying himself? Wangji is right there. There is nothing stopping him. It is only his own foolish self-abnegation that is making him do this. He forces his movements to remain slow and even as he sits at the table, flicking his sleeves back out of the way. He unwraps Wang Ji from its case, hands reverent on the gleaming wood. On the table, the warm light of his lantern makes it glow richly. It has been a while since he played the song. He half expects it to feel odd under his fingers, rusty and wooden and tentative. It is not. The first version had felt astonishingly perfect when he first played it, but he is more aware now of all the ways it is not. He plays and pauses, and then reshapes it all under his hands. New fragments of the music emerge, more delicately crafted than he had known how to do before. Binding it all together, though, he starts to find what had been missing. There had been a sharpness to the joy that had enveloped him at the sight of Wei Ying, easily overshadowed in the moment by a desperate mixture of irritation and desire. But there was still joy to it, and with it, the music springs into life. Sometimes, he almost forgets that Wang Ji is a weapon. It is his companion, and often his solace. If he is not careful, he can lose sight of the fact that it is not its true purpose. It is now, in the drudgery of a war not quite yet declared, when everything around him has become chaos and destruction, that he cannot stop thinking about it. Now, when he treks through Qishan on a broken leg, Wang Ji has been separated from him for the first time that he can really remember. One swift attack would fend off Wen Chao, force him to leave them all be, fruitless as that would be in the long run. Or Lan Wangji could simply sit and play, trying to calm his thoughts for the first time in weeks. There are too many things swirling in his mind, the knowledge that, somewhere, his father is dying or already dead, that his brother may be as well. The pain in his leg, the worry that it will not heal right, especially given these conditions. And Wei Ying, who is here and bright and terribly, wonderfully vivid. He is as teasing as ever, utterly unable to take even this seriously. Lan Wangji wants to hate him for it, but instead he just longs. For his Guqin, for Wei Ying, here and caring not a whit for him except to tease. and when he finds himself somehow trapped in a cave, with only Wei Ying and no weapons, he almost wants to scream. The Wen are cruel, to be sure, but half of Lan Wangji's suffering now, in this damp cave, cannot even be attributed to them. It is all heartache. The loss of Wangji, though, that is indubitably their fault, and as much as he longs to just play for the catharsis it would bring, he wishes he could fight even more. It had served him well in their last stand, attempting to defend his home as it burned all around him. That it had been all for nothing could not be helped. The memories of it are bright in his mind, try as he might to focus on the current situation. He needs Wangji more than ever, and it is gone. The makeshift thing they rig up in the end to allow him to use cord assassination, well, it's serviceable. It works, but it takes hours on grueling hours, and it produces no music, just sound. The strange twanging is grating on his ears, and the ache for Wangji rots into a solid weight at the base of his throat. He is cold and alone, Wei Ying unmoving above him. He grits his teeth. Lan Wangji is tired of being surrounded by so much death. When the false Xuanwu finally collapses into the water, staining it with swirls of ink black and crimson red, he hauls Wei Ying out of the water. Wei Ying is a bundle of wet cloth in his arms, barely breathing, but still breathing. Lan Wangji clings to that fact, as hard as he clings to Wei Ying's body. He is so cold, so pale, and Lan Wangji can only think of death, death, death. He stirs, eventually, and Lan Wangji feels so dizzy with relief that the realization that they are still trapped in here barely registers. Wei Ying is still pale, but he is back to something like himself, all motion and chatter, never still, never quiet. Lan Wangji would be content to look at him almost forever, but it does not last long before he collapses, the fever that has been threatening for days taking him at last. It does not leave him any less dizzy. There is little Lan Wangji can do for him. He hardly has qi left to spare, but he passes Wei Ying what little he can, holding his wrist as if he might break under his fingers at any moment. He had made a request, though, before he passed out, and it is somehow easier to honour it with him like this. He cannot chatter shamelessly while unconscious, and Lan Wangji is not strong enough to not need the reassurance of being able to hold him, to confirm he is warm and breathing and alive. Still, it takes several clenched breaths, but he gathers up his decorum and Wei Ying. He positions him carefully in his lap, as comfortable as Lan Wangji can make him. His breathing evens out a little once he is settled, face relaxing, though, so it is worth how Lan Wangji has to grit his teeth to keep from being utterly overwhelmed. He does his best to sink into meditation, but even if he could find the serenity he craves, it is pointless. There is much to be done. When Wei Ying wakes again, Lan Wangji is once again shocked by the strength of his own relief. It had been a long time since he stirred, and Lan Wangji's worry had become harder to control. He finds he can listen to Wei Ying's chatter with astonishing equanimity now. At least it means he is alive, and well enough to talk. He does his best to talk, to entertain him, but Lan Wangji has never been very entertaining. His responses are terse, but it cannot dissuade Wei Ying. It seems nothing can. He only grows more teasing, more impossible, more infuriating. And then he says, "Will you sing a song?" And Lan Wangji stills. Everything would be easier if he had Wangji, he finds himself thinking, yet again. Everything is always easier if he has Wangji. Instead, he has Wei Ying, and the darkness surrounding them, joy and fear mixing in equal measure, with the twisting strain of the melody that has followed him for the last few years. So he takes a breath, and he does as he is asked. The melody flows past his lips. His voice feels rough in his throat, but he pushes past it. What does it matter? Wei Ying murmurs in approval, then falls silent. He is either listening or asleep again. It's hard to tell, and Lan Wangji isn't sure which he'd prefer. He feels like he is ripping his own heart out, holding it in his hands. Maybe it's better if Wei Ying doesn't see. Still, he keeps singing, right until the end. Then Wei Ying mutters, "What's it called?" Lan Wangji freezes. It didn't have a name before. It does now. "Wangxian," he says, keeping it soft, just wanting to taste the syllables on his tongue. The end. If you enjoyed, please go back to the original fic and give it kudos/comments, and thank you to Epistrophic for having blanket permission to record their works. Have a great day.